This is Julie Sabatier, and my guest today is Stephen Elliott. He's the editor of the anthology Stumbling and Raging, a collection of politically inspired fiction. Why did you decide to do a sequel anthology to Politically Inspired?
Well, you know, the first Politically Inspired anthology did really well, and it got all these great writers really more involved in the political process, gave them a voice, you know, for fiction writers, a place to place their politically inspired fiction, fiction inspired by current political events. And we raised a lot of money for Oxfam, and it was really great. The book came out as kind of a literary voice against what was going on in Iraq. And the thing about democracy is you find, you do one thing, you think, okay, I did my thing, I participated, and now I don't have to do anything anymore because I can just go back to my life. I can go back teaching at the university. I teach at creative writing down at Stanford. I can go back to my relationships, my insular world. And the problem is you can't, because democracy requires participation. And you find that you have to keep going. So I put together a pretty large organization in 2004 called Operation Ohio. And I had all these writers going into Ohio and doing voter registration readings and offering to make voting reminder phone calls on election day. Well, I had Tobias Wolff, you know, Michael Cunningham, Anthony Swofford, Amy Bender, and all these, everybody going in and either going to Ohio or volunteering to make the phone calls. Well, we lost in 2004. And so after the election, I thought, I just want to drop out. But you don't have that option. How are you going to win back the House if you drop out of the political process? What do? Just go home and just be angry? So I realized I had to put together another anthology. This anthology, which frankly is better than the first anthology. This is an amazing anthology of original fiction. And this time all the proceeds are going directly to progressive candidates running for House seats in 2006. And teamed with the anthology, we have a reading series in San Francisco and New York. So we're going to raise, hopefully, $80,000 this year that we're going to funnel directly into progressive congressional candidates. And a lot of these authors had stories that were inspired by current political events. Others wrote original ones. But, you know, people like Dave Eggers, Sandra Cisneros, they were so psyched just to be part of something like this. And you would think these super famous authors, Audrey Niffenegger, you know, she was the time traveler's wife. You'd think that she wouldn't care. She certainly doesn't need the exposure. She had the best-selling book of the year a year or two ago. I mean, or one of them, certainly. And it's not true. They all want to participate. The writers have been really, we haven't been turned down very much. You know, and we had hundreds of submissions for this anthology from a lot of people that have pretty good selling books out there already. We were able to break it down to like the best 26 stories from the authors we really love.
Actually, one of my favorite stories came from an unknown writer, or previously unknown writer. I think his name is Karan Mahajan.
That's right, Karan Mahajan. This is his first publication. We actually went to the slush pile quite a bit. Stephen Keesby also came from the slush pile. So did Jeff Parker. I had students helping me in the editorial process, and the story submissions would go to them, and they were not allowed to give me a story unless they were willing to like live or die by it. It had to be something that they believed had to be published. Otherwise, they were totally authorized to get back to everybody and reject their story, because we were getting too many submissions. I only had enough time to read. Either I knew you already, you're an author who I asked to give me something, so then I had to read your story. Or the student said, this is the greatest story I've ever read. And Karan was actually one of the undergrad students at Stanford. And so this is his first publication. But the story is amazing.
It is. It's really haunting and interesting.
Yeah, and for those who haven't read the anthology yet, it's set in India, and it's that particular story is from the perspective of an Indian who accidentally kills his wife, who is a Muslim, thereby taking off huge race riots between the Muslim and Hindu population of this city.
And it's a story that involves kind of a high pressure, you know, fast moving situation where he's kidnapped and you don't know why for most of the story. But it's such a slow moving story. It evolves. You have to read it really slowly. You have to sort of get into it.
You know, when you're teaching writing, one of the things I tell my students is tension is like currency. So, you know, you build up all this tension and then you can go really slow and you can like, you can do whatever you want. And he has a situation that's so tense, so fraught, that he could do anything in there. And that's actually one of the things about the stories in this book. Above and beyond everything else, these are really good stories, and a lot of them are really funny. And we were able to put together an anthology of stories that are just tight. They're just, you know, you will enjoy this collection on its own merits, in addition to giving your money to a good cause, which is to win back the House for Progressives in 2006.
There's a lot of violence in these stories, a lot of really unsettling images, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, humor and love and all those other things. But I think one theme that was just kind of running through it is this kind of this unflinching relationship with violence.
Mm.
How do you explain that?
Well, again, you know, there's hundreds of submissions for this. So in the end, what you're seeing are my tastes reflected in the book. These are stories that I really liked. That stood out from other stories for some reason. They were original somehow. I think certainly a lot of these stories are reflections of what's happening in Iraq, of America's policy in the Middle East. There's several stories set in war zones, or from the perspective of soldiers, or in one case from the perspective of a translator in Baghdad. So I think there's no way to write a story that's set in Baghdad that doesn't reflect the incredible violence there. Like the kid, Fasam Hassan, went to Iraq, and it was front page in every newspaper in the country that a 16-year-old American had gone to Iraq and had not had his head chopped off. We couldn't believe it. That's how violent this place is. That the very idea of an American surviving there without a gun, we can no longer even accept that as a possibility. So that lets you know how bad things have gotten there. What if this kid had gone to Iran? Would we have been that worried about a child in Iran? I don't think we would have. A child in Darfur, Syria? How about a child in Iraq when Saddam Hussein was there? Would we have thought it was impossible for an American child to survive for a week in Iraq when Saddam Hussein was in power? I don't think so. We've made that place the most anti-American, most violent place in the world. And that changing world is one of the things reflected in this book.
My guest today is Stephen Elliott, and we're talking about the anthology of politically inspired fiction called Stumbling and Raging. So what do you think fiction has to contribute to the political discussion?
Well, a lot. And historically, fiction has played a huge role in the cultural consciousness. You know, look at Dostoevsky, look at Tolstoy, War and Peace, Brothers Karamazov, look at Vaclav Havel, look at The Book of Laughter and Forgetting, Milan Kundera. I love that book, too. And fiction writers have always played a major role in the political consciousness of the nation. In fact, it's kind of a place where that political consciousness kind of filters down. So of course, it's hugely important that fiction writers be engaged. American fiction is often not as political as international, as our international contemporaries, like Gabriel Garcia Marquez and 100 Years of Solitude. But more and more, American writers are becoming more political and getting in that incredible stream of writers that has affected where the world has gone, usually for the better. Fiction writers have to observe the world really closely, and they have to think about it, and they have to interact with it much more than a nonfiction writer, much more than a journalist who only has to reflect the news of the day. The fiction writer has to reflect the zeitgeist, has to reflect where the culture is moving, and a fiction writer can take a true story and follow it to its logical conclusion, to things that haven't even happened yet. Can imagine the individual in these situations and the things that they might never tell the press, and can explore, you know, can take that situation and lift it up and look at all the different angles. What the fiction writer can contribute is enormous.
Yeah, and it seems like, while there's a lot that the fiction writer can do that maybe the nonfiction writer can't, there's also some unique challenges, especially to writing political fiction. I mean, there's so many sort of cliches you can fall into.
Well, that's the challenge of writing good fiction. And that's why we were lucky to have so many submissions from so many great writers, that we were able to publish a book that only had good fiction. Good fiction is always sympathetic to all of its characters. Look at Jim Shepherd wrote a story from the perspective of John Ashcroft that's beautiful and funny, but also somehow very sympathetic to, let's face it, a very evil man, but somehow is able to get in his head and present his story in a way that all sides can understand, the way that a nonfiction writer can never do.
It's a really interesting story. I remember he says, I don't like the way I look when I eat.
Yeah.
It's such an intimate detail.
It's a beautiful story. It's really, really well done. Jim Shepherd is the master at inhabiting the character's voice. He had that great book, Project X, from the perspective of a child that, shot up his school, similar to Columbine. And he's so in that child's head. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And you have a story that appears in here also. It's a graphic story.
Right. I did an illustrated story with Lauren McCubbin. She's an incredible artist. I wanted to find a way to get her in the book. So I wrote a story for her that she illustrated. And that's in the book. And that's from the perspective of a human shield in Iraq just before shock and awe breaks out on March 20th of 2003. And I was actually pretty obsessed with going to Iraq as a human shield. And so I wrote a bunch of short stories from the perspective of a human shield in Iraq. I was reading about them every chance I got, and I almost went before I was talked out of it by more sensible people, maybe.
But you got to write about it.
But I wrote about it from that perspective because I was reading so much. I was able to reflect all that I was reading in the news in a more interesting, more vital first-person encounter. You know, why would this person? What were my motives for wanting to go? I didn't go, but I was extremely close to going. I was able to explore through fiction my motives for wanting to be a human shield in Iraq at a time when I didn't actually know how Iraq was going to turn out, which is one of the dangerous things about being political. You take a side what you don't really know. I remember saying to the head of the English department at Stanford, I hope that it really works out in Iraq for George Bush. I hope that George Bush is right and I'm wrong. And if that happens, I'm going to join the Republican Party. Yeah, I was ready. I was like, I'm ready to admit that I'm wrong. And I hope that I am, for the benefit of the American soldiers that are going off to die, and for the benefit of the Iraqis. I hoped sincerely that George Bush was right and I was wrong. George Bush wasn't right. It was relatively obvious that he was incompetent from the start, and then we went in there for reasons that turned out not to be true. And I don't think we'll ever actually know why we went there. There's so many different people with their own agendas pushing us into Iraq. It's just this perfect storm, yeah. And it's this massive. It's the biggest tragedy of our times, and it's unfortunate that I was right about that. That me and so many other liberals and progressives and Democrats and moderates and conservatives were right about not going into Iraq, but we were not the voices that were listened to.
Certainly true. My guest today is Stephen Elliott, and we're talking about the anthology of politically inspired fiction called Stumbling and Raging. So what do you think this book is going to look like in maybe a decade or 20 years?
Well, I think that the great thing about good fiction is it'll always be a strong read. And so I think that people will read it for stories, and they'll read it to get a sense of the cultural norms of our time, and they'll get an idea of where our culture was at, what people who were thinking, who were artists and were engaging, you know, in the culture, they'll think, What were they thinking? And writers capture that. Fiction writers capture that in a way that nobody else can.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. There's so much tension in here. I mean, there's so much. There's a couple of stories that touch on, and the drawing in the beginning about the election and all the tension that everyone felt leading up to the election.
Yeah, you can't sleep.
How close it was and everything. Mm-hmm. And
I wrote a book about that election. I was on the campaign trail in 2004, and I wrote a book about the 2004 presidential election. And I remember the day after the election, I think it was November 5th, right, was it
November 3rd?
Yeah, and that Wednesday. And I was ill. I couldn't leave the bed. I was in Florida. I was in Broward County, Florida. And I couldn't even get up. I couldn't even speak. I was so sick.
Yeah, it was a hard day.
It was a hard day. And it was that day when I thought, I don't want to participate anymore.
Right. And then I guess you just got back on the horse, huh?
You have to. You don't have the option. That's the tragedy of democracy, is you don't have the choice of whether or not you want to participate. You have to participate.
I don't think everybody sees it that way.
that's unfortunate for them, because they're the ones that are going to suffer from not seeing it that way. It's their needs and their things that affect their lives deeply, like the ability to choose if they want to die, like the choice of what they do with their own bodies, what they view on the internet, their sexual freedom, what kind of drugs they're able to take, what kind of prescriptions they're able to afford, healthcare, pensions, how much they're paid. It's going to affect them and the things that they can do in their lives. And when they think that they don't have a responsibility, and the Republicans play to that, and when education suffers, it's just, the administration wants education to suffer, because the dumber you are, the more likely you're going to vote Republican or not vote.
And so is that how you chose to have the royalties from the book benefit progressive candidates in 2006?
I mean, I liked Oxfam as an organization a lot. With the first anthology, it was benefiting them. But I wanted to make an impact right now. And so that's why we decided that, I decided that the proceeds would help candidates in 2006.
So how does the job of editing something like this compare to the job of writing?
Well, editing is a tough job. And most stories, if it wasn't pretty much perfect when it came in, I wouldn't, edit it. And so most of editing was just choosing the stories and the order they were going to go in the collection, putting the collection together. Sometimes you get a story that's so good, but there's something wrong with it, and you have to just piece it together. You have to help the author find what he or she is trying to say. But it's the same part of the brain. When you're editing, you're being creative. You're using your writing muscles. And so you're taking time off from your writing to do it.
Yeah.
Is the moral of that story.
Are you working on any fiction yourself right now?
I have a new collection of stories coming out later this year. I've written 4 novels already. And I have a collection of short fiction that'll come out in September, a collection of erotica. So hopefully if you have me back, we'll talk about erotica and things of that nature. And that'll be out.
Political erotica?
I actually put I have a foreword at the beginning of the book stating why I'm publishing this book of short erotica. And it's for political reasons, because people are not, if you don't speak out about your sexuality, right? And if kinky people don't go out and tell people they're kinky and talk to them about it, then we will continue to be disempowered. And our freedoms will continue to be limited. And that was really the reason for taking this collection of, stuff I'd published on Nerve.com and other places and putting it together so that people, particularly in the S&M community, have more of a voice. People that are out in public, people like me, who I write regularly for Esquire and the New York Times, and I'm willing to go out there and say, this is my sexuality, this is what I'm into, and I have to force people to accept that. And I think that erotica is a major political statement that needs to be made. And I think that sexual repression fuels a lot of the problems in the world. I feel that very deeply.
Yeah. Well, that sounds interesting. So it's all your stories then?
Those are all my stories.
My guest today is Stephen Elliott, and we're talking about the anthology of politically inspired fiction called Stumbling and Raging. Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of things in here that maybe you wouldn't think of as being political per se, or from the outset, you're kind of reading going, how is this exactly?
It's not necessarily
political,
but it's inspired by a current political event.
Yeah.
And, what you look for in a good story is an even-handedness. A story might have an agenda, but you shouldn't feel like it has an agenda. In the experience of reading fiction, you might be being manipulated, but you shouldn't feel manipulated in order to enjoy a good story. And so all of these stories had to live up to the standards of good fiction.
And how did you choose the sections, like the politics of desire, of culture, of children?
It just became obvious by what we were getting, how these things broke down, what people were thinking about, In the first one, I think we had a politics of 9/11. We don't have that now. People are writing about things affected by 9/11, but we're not getting as many stories that are taking place on 9/12 the way we were then. This time we have a lot more stories set in Iraq, a lot more people thinking about soldiers' perspectives and the perspective of Iraqis. We didn't have that in the first collection.
What are some other themes that came up in this collection that maybe didn't come up in the last one?
Well, the soldier thing was huge. Children and voting is really big. Kind of the will our children vote kind of thing. Immigration became an issue. Sandra Cisneros has this incredible story of these. I think the lady is Czechoslovakia and the guy is Mexican, and they're marrying each other thinking that they're marrying a citizen. They're marrying for citizenship. And neither of them is a citizen. They're both illegal. And so it's this beautiful, it's very tender because they're so in love. You know what else came up a lot is fear. Code orange, right? Like Doug Dorst. And people writing about living in a police state, living in a society where you're being watched. This became a really major issue that people wrote about quite a bit.
Yeah. So do you have ideas for a third one?
I have ideas, but it might be a couple years off, you know. Yeah. But I'll continue to do these because it's important. It's important that fiction writers have a place to publish their political fiction. It's important that fiction writers take part in the dialogue and anything we can do. Every group can do their own part to raise funds, to get out awareness, to get progressive to the poll. The more people vote, the better chance we'll have of having accountable public officials. And the less people vote, the more we're going to have people like Tom Delay and George Bush in office. You know, those people get in office because people don't vote, because they're not popular with the majority of people, but they're popular with a group of people that does vote. Angry, uninformed group of people, which is unfortunate. So anything I can do to stay involved in that process, I'm going to do.
Do you know of any kind of conservative counterpart to Stumbling and Raging?
It's interesting. There isn't one. And one thing I tried to do, I tried very actively to do, is to get people of different political viewpoints contributing. I couldn't find a good fiction writer, a good literary fiction writer, that had Republican viewpoints. I mean, they had viewpoints maybe that might have been considered Republican before George Bush, but not anymore. I think the problem is, maybe it's not a problem, but literary writers, because they're so engaged with the world and they're so observant and they're so in touch with what's going on, they know why we're in Iraq. They know we weren't supposed to go to Iraq. They know we were there for weapons of mass destruction that don't exist. And so if you have somebody that observes the world, they know that there is no link between 9/11 and Iraq, that the people that were responsible for 9/11 was not Saddam Hussein. There was no link between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. And you can't have a conversation with somebody that believes there's a link between Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, because you're dealing with someone who is off the grid.
They're living in their own fictional world.
They're living in their own fictional world. But good literary fiction writers are too observant to believe that kind of stuff. And so you end up, it's incredible how, not necessarily liberal, but certainly how progressive, how anti-George Bush every fiction writer I know is. And like most novelists, I know all the other novelists. We all know each other. It's a very small world. And there just aren't any good literary fiction writers who are Republicans right now. You know, you might find some who will vote for McCain, conceivably, but you can't find anybody that will vote for George W. Bush that is writing good literary fiction. I challenge you on that, because I looked. I really looked. You might find somebody writing science fiction, and you might find somebody writing pulp fiction, where the characters are not developed really strongly, really plot-heavy fiction. But you won't find somebody writing good literary fiction. You might find people writing bad literary fiction because they're not able to engage in the world honestly, which is what writing literary fiction requires. So no good Republican literary writers. I'll just put it right. I'll just say it. It's just true. And this is not. I say this from looking and from experience.
But did you get some stories that were from a Republican perspective?
It was like they were written by third graders, though. They weren't real. They weren't the kind of stories you would actually consider for a major anthology.
I was going to ask about the documents and letters, kind of the satirical things that start out each section. How did those come about?
Came about initially because of letters that Adam Johnson had written that were just very funny. He actually wrote those letters. He sent a letter to the makers of the Patriot missile saying he wanted to purchase a Patriot missile, and they sent him a brochure. They responded to that letter. They sent him a brochure. He sent letters, seeking a job in Dick Cheney's shadow government. And his letters were so funny that I wanted to publish them in the book. And then John Warner, it turned out, also had a letter. Sean Carman had a letter that was submitted. So it just kind of, there were these letters, you know, the Sean Carman's, which became, he and I kind of reworked that together, and it became the letter from Tom Ridge, the submissions editor. And I don't know. People just wrote these stories that were really letters, and then we decided, well, let's make them images. Let's make them actual letters, you know, rather than just having them be text. And so it just became a really funny thing to open each chapter with.
Did you actually send that Tom Ridge rejection letter to anyone?
No.
As a writer reading that, I was like, oh, God. That's harsh.
It's funny, though.
But really funny. Definitely funny. What's your favorite story in the book?
Trying to make me enemies. I could not even begin to go there. You know, I think that Stephen Keesby had the hardest road to getting in the book. Right? Here's a guy, totally unknown writer, has a little novella published from a small press, probably a print run of 500. Nobody knows who this guy is. I had no connection to him at all. His story, the students loved his story so much, they insisted I read it, but I was so busy, and we were pretty much done with the book already when that story came in. I was like, I just don't have room for another story. I don't have time to read it. And they just would not let go. I mean, this just came right from the slush pile, from nobody I'd ever heard of. I don't know how he knew to send it in. The students got it, and I kept pushing him, no, I don't want to read it. So then another student read it. So then all editors were like, you've got to read this story by Stephen Keesby, set in Germany before the first Gulf War. And finally, I read it to make the students happy, because they said that I was using them and not caring about their time, and I read the story. And it was so great. You know, it's such an amazing story. But I love all the stories. I mean, you know, there's a lot of humor in here. And frankly, a lot of the submissions were not as funny. And probably half the stories in this book have a real strong sense of humor. You know, the Dave Eggers story is hysterical. So funny. Sandra Cisneros' story has a real openness to it. David Amson's story, Amy Bender's story. A lot of these stories have a real humor.
It's important for political, especially for political fiction, I would think, not to take it too seriously.
Yeah, and it can be hard to do, especially in these times where it can make you so angry when you read the newspaper in the morning.
Well, and there's a lot of that frustration that comes through also in a very human way.
Yeah, you look at Michelle Herman's story, El Fin del Mundo, and how you're slowly starting to understand that the tension in the political process is breaking up her marriage. It takes a little, you got to go pretty deep, and that's a long story, and you go pretty deep into it before you really get that.
It's true, and it's told from the perspective of her daughter, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
I think that's all my questions. Did you want to add anything?
No, there's nothing much to add. It's a really tight collection of really, the great thing about editing a collection of stories is that I can say to you, this is a great collection of stories, because I picked the stories. Obviously, I believe in the value of them and how good they are, you know, Stumbling and Raging. And so when you publish a novel, you can't really say that. You can't say this novel is the best novel you're going to read this year. But I can say this anthology is the best anthology you're going to read this year. This is the best collection of stories that's come out in a while. So, and it's just a great collection, and I hope people enjoy it as much as I enjoyed putting it together.
I've been speaking with Stephen Elliott. He's edited a new collection of politically inspired fiction called Stumbling and Raging. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor An Evening in Vietnam, a benefit for Village School Foundation. Experience Vietnamese culture through music and dance featuring nationally known guitarist and storyteller Dun. Enjoy Vietnamese food and a special video presentation of the Village School Foundation's recent efforts to provide education resources to the children of Vietnam. The event will be held at 6:30 p.m. Saturday, February 25th at the PCC Rock Creek Campus, Building Number 3. For more information, please call 503-957-0740 or 503-997-2260.
KBOO Community Radio has an immediate opening for an interim membership coordinator. This is a temporary position lasting for a period of 90 days. The position will be responsible for the oversight of the membership drive and various other duties. For a complete job announcement, please visit our site online at www.kboo.fm. The position closes Friday, February 24th at 5 p.m.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM. Still to come on the radio zine, we will hear a talk by award-winning scientist Jane Lubchenco on environment and human well-being. And at 10:30 on stage and studio, D-May Roberts features Portland Center Stages, The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow, and Damali Ayo's Living Flag, a look at reparations for slavery. Up next, the topic is